T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
NBC Sports Chicago is dealing with this with Dish right now. And I was reading Charlie's piece on Patrick Kane today. And at the bottom of it, it talks about, you know, if you're a Dish Network subscriber and you haven't been able to get Blackhawks hockey, like, you need to call them. I don't know if that's going to move people. And it's the same thing with the Cubs. I don't know. And I was looking in some comments. I think it was Greenberg's piece on this. I was looking in some comments and one guy said, why do I need to do the work? And I think it's a very fair criticism of both NBC Sports Chicago and the Cubs and Marquee. Why should I, as a viewer, as a loyal viewer, have to then go out and do the footwork for both of these companies?
Make me a bicycle, clown!
Welcome in. My name is Lawrence Holmes. I'm here with you until 2 o'clock today. We don't have any guest schedule for today's show, which is good because at 1 o'clock, I would like to talk about your Cubs convention experience. You and I, like I talked yesterday, I want to kind of give you the opportunity to do that at 1 o'clock and we can take some phone calls and thoughts on Marquee and booing and where the Cubs are at coming up at one. There's some other stuff I also want to do in there, but I wanted to give you I wanted to get a sense of what went down over the weekend and where you're at. I did a whole podcast on Marquee with some of the stuff that we used on the show yesterday. It's on LoHo Daily if you want to check it out. But at 1 o'clock, we will open up the phone lines and talk about this more in depth. At 12:40 today, the crew and I will go around and go talk about the things that we think we know about the NFL. I've also got some cool NFL stuff that I want to get to that you may have missed because you were doing other stuff yesterday with your day off. But we start the show as we start all things with the rundown.
Run them down.
The rundown.
Here is your rundown for Tuesday, January 21st, 2020. The Blackhawks are leading the rundown today. You know why? Because they're going to take on the Florida Panthers tonight. And know what that means? That means that Joel Quenneville is back in the building. This was Joel Quenneville the last time the Blackhawks were winning Stanley Cups.
There's a lot of memories that come and pop in your mind, and we've been fortunate for some of us to be here for three of them. And I think back, and I think in 2010, I think in Boston, not Philly, and I think immediately, I think Kaner the magician making the puck disappear. 2013, I think it's 17 seconds. This year, I've never been more proud of a team than I am of our players from this year's achievement. And this one will go down, and it will be, in my memory, is what made it this cup the best memory is all about team. Thank you.
Charlie Rumi Liotis of NBC Sports Chicago did a really cool sit-down in a podcast with Joel Quenneville. It's worth your time if you're a crazy Blackhawks fan that is all about Blackhawks history. In the present, Scott Powers of The Athletic reports that in morning skate today, Duncan Keith and Jonathan Toews got after each other a little bit. A little sandpaper as the Blackhawks are playing much better hockey these days. I like it. So the Hawks have won 5 in a row. They're 24-20-6 right now. Their penalty kill is 4th in the NHL. They've been better. They've won 11 out of their last 15 games. Coming off that win against Winnipeg on Sunday. So things are looking up. They're on a pace for about 93, 94 points as it stands right now. And they think they need to be a little bit above that to be a playoff team. But they've got Florida tonight. Coach Q will be in the building. That should be a very, very interesting night. All right. Okay, so this one I wasn't ready for. NBA game, our guy Kevin Harlan, who I adore. Oh, Hassan Whiteside got kicked in the ding-ding. Oh, all right. I'm all for Kevin Harlan describing that.
Pascal, the fake, the drive. Oh, what defense. What defense. Lillard, Trent, a bent down. Whiteside is down. Whiteside is down, as you can see. The Blazers are up by two. And this, moments ago, right beneath the belt. That face and where he just took that knee speaks volumes. He took it where no man wants to get it.
Well, he was doing his job. Ouch. By protecting the rim, but Pascal led with his knee.
Hey, Reggie, get out the way. Color commentator, shut up. Let that man cook. He was trying to cook and tell you what went. We don't need you to try and give it flavor. Harlan's got that covered. Just move, bitch. Get out the way.
It's almost a shame because that overshadowed the fact that Dame had 61.
He had 54 in regulation, right?
Yeah.
And he comes out there.
Three, send it to OT.
He was money from behind the arc. Was he 11-18 or something like that from behind the arc? And then just get out the way, man. Oh, yeah. So we do, since we were doing NBA, we do need to talk about the Bulls. So Giannis yesterday had 28-14-10.
Nice feed. Giannis to DiVincenzo.
DiVincenzo cutting so well without the ball. Yeah. And right there, the fans know a triple-double for Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, he's really, really good. Chris Middleton, 24-6-6 for the Bucks. They beat the Bulls 111-98. Somehow a team that turned the ball over 23 times won the game. Let's talk about Lauri Markkanen for a second. 8 points, 8 rebounds for him in 31 minutes. Jim Boylan says he can get better.
There's a lot of things out there at this level in this league. I don't believe in that. I don't believe that. And I know he's going to work, and he cares, and he's got high character, and I believe in him. So, and our team believes in him.
Just one more to piggyback on Casey's question.
Do I believe in him? Yeah, I believe in him.
Okay, I'm here to tell you statistically that he's gotten worse, and luckily I have Rick Camp on my show so he can help break this down. Campy, get this. I went back and looked. Because I feel like, as a Bulls fan, looking at box scores every day, I have seen too much of Markkanen in single digits this year. And I'm like, well, is that an outlier? So here are the games this year. October 25th versus Memphis, 9 points. October 26th versus Toronto, 9 points. November 5th against the Lakers, 7 points. November 18th versus Milwaukee, 9 points. November 22nd versus Miami, 9 points. November 23rd, 3 points in 23 minutes. November 27th against Golden State, 8 points. All double digits through the month of December. January, 9 points against Boston on the 13th and 8 points last night against Milwaukee. He's played 45 games. He has 9 games this season where he's scored in single digits. 20% of his games this year, he has not been in double digits. So I said, all right, we'll go back and look at the game logs from the two previous seasons. In the two previous seasons, last year, he only had 4 single-digit games out of 51. So that's a pretty good apples to apples, 51 games versus 45 games. And then he had 8 his rookie season, 8 out of 68 games that he played. What is wrong?
I think part of it is you write off some of those team names. Those are some of the better teams that they've played all year.
And I will say one of the little mini like things that I drew from it was in back-to-backs on the second half of a back-to-back,
he's been real bad.
Right, and I'm not saying it's the reason, but he's definitely, like, he's not 100% healthy. Nobody's really 100% healthy, but he's playing through stuff. So I think there's at least a small margin that has to go to that. But it's also that... It's also just the fact that bigger guys on him on those teams that they're playing. Like, you think Bam Adebayo on him, those kind of things with Miami. The Lakers have a bunch of big dudes. Size bothers him some. And just the fact that he doesn't have a skill set in the post. Everybody keeps saying for him to go to the post and bully guys. He doesn't have the frame to bully anybody. And the fact that he doesn't really have the post moves at all. Unless it's that fadeaway, which you don't really... You could probably do that against pretty much anybody. And he's just not forceful in wanting the ball. That's probably the biggest part of any of it.
Are you convinced at this point that he won't be a superstar?
Oh, I was convinced of that a while ago.
Okay.
I'm just convinced now that instead of his... Maybe his max is still like the role Kevin Love played on the Cavs, but...
He's not as good of a passer, though.
Oh, no. No. Or rebounder. But that was kind of what the thought of... My thought of his... ceiling could be, and he's just not that. He is a nice 7-foot shooter at this point. That's pretty much what he is.
Herbie, do you think that Markkanen has a chance to be a superstar still?
No, I don't think he was when he was drafted. When I saw him getting drafted by the Bulls, I remember that trade. I was like, okay, the Bulls are getting Dunn, LaVine, and Markkanen, and giving up Jimmy and another pick, like, that's not a good trade at all, because the only player in there is LaVine, and his game has progressed.
Everybody forgets about that first-round pick that they gave up, too, just because it was a bust.
Yeah, I mean, what was it, Patton?
Justin Patton from Creighton?
Yeah, initially, I thought it was a great trade if they didn't include the first-round pick also. But, yeah, I never thought that Lauri Markkanen was going to be anything special, especially because the people picking him. They don't have basketball evaluation skills.
It just really sucks because you see a guy that's got stuff. Like, you see, like, some of the skills and attributes. You go, oh, well, this is where the NBA is going. And there are just too many, there are too many nights when he disappears. Whether it's the way the offense is designed or him not calling for the ball, him not asserting himself. And I don't know if that's a cultural issue or what, but he needs to, if the Bulls are ever going to have any chance in the near future to be considered anything other than a joke, he has to overperform. And right now, he's not doing that. And it looks like it's going backwards to him.
I mentioned it earlier today that it's hard for any sort of player evaluation right now. There's no constants. Not in terms of the coaching, not in terms of other players on the team to be able to say, okay, well, when Lowry is with whoever or in whatever situation versus someone else, you can't markedly show, okay, he's getting better in X scenario, because there's no players that are really constants. You're not getting really consistent performances from anybody. That was why I saw value in the Otto Porter trade when it happened, even though you were punting on some cap space. So I still think that that made sense as a way to give some sort of a constant to their starting lineup, if nothing else, and be able to evaluate Lowry and be able to evaluate Zach LaVine. But now he's been hurt so much, you lost that, and it's thrown everything into flux.
They're going to give you the Mitch thing. He's 22. He's young in his career. This is his third year as a pro type of stuff. But in the NBA, who do you see middling or below average and then become the guy that they want him to be? Usually,
you kind of know.
You are that guy.
Yeah.
Initially, and I mean, you can progress a little bit.
There are guys that develop.
There's guys who develop, but there's no guy that's like, man, that guy's really mediocre, and then he turns into a beast.
I would say Jimmy Butler. I say Jimmy Butler is one of those guys.
Yeah.
I say Jimmy was a pretty good player that is now, like, with what he's doing in Miami, you look and go, wow, this is one of the players that he won't be MVP, but he'll get MVP votes for what he's done for the Heat. I think that's a guy that's worth putting on the, like, he was pretty good. You thought he'd be pretty good, but maybe not one of the best players in the league.
Okay, that's one.
Pascal Siakam's doing it right now.
So, all right. So now that we worked our way around this, Is there any reason to believe that if Lowry were in a better situation, let's put him in a vacuum and put him in a better situation, better coaching, better teammates.
Put him in Miami or Toronto where they have a proven development system.
Put him in San Antonio.
Sure. Even though that one's getting a little sketchy. But yeah, in a good development system, he's a better player, but he's still not a star. And he's sure as hell not a superstar.
But also, I said mediocre, and you guys named pretty good players for the start off.
Lowry was a salary dump a couple times. When he got to Toronto, he was almost traded to the Knicks for nothing.
He wasn't very, like, okay, he wasn't one of the better players until his late 20s.
Is he on a different team?
Yeah, you never said anything about being on the same team.
But he was mediocre. This is one good one right here. Brandon Ingram. That is what I'm talking about.
But there were a lot of people who thought that Ingram, like, it was a weird situation, and you looked at him as a player, and you thought, it could work.
David Griffin loved him. Like, he was on NBA TV last year saying he loved Brandon Ingram, just not in that situation. So for a guy that's still in the rookie deal that's shown potential as much as a guy like Brandon Ingram had, I still think that's a little different than even Markkanen, because Markkanen showed some signs, but even when Markkanen was at his best, he was a limited player who was maybe close to average defensively, who didn't do much else than shoot really well and be able to come off screens, which made him a little unique for a 7-footer.
This texter says Jimmy Butler is not one of the best players in the game, and then follows up and says fringe top 20.
He's a top 15 player right
now. Okay, let's say that this guy's right and that he's a top 20 player. That makes him one of the best players in the league.
Yes.
Because there's more than 30 franchises. So
Chauncey Billups came in on the text line. That's a good one.
Points are a little different. Because I do think that it might take a point guard a little bit more time to understand the game, and then when you get put with a bunch of guys that make it work, that it's almost like those guys end up becoming better mentally as their physical games are starting to decline.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird, but if you think that, and I'm not a Jimmy Butler fan at all, if you don't think that Jimmy Butler has been one of the best players in the NBA this year, I question whether or not you're actually watching the NBA. I truly question it.
See, this is the thing. You guys keep on naming these players. I want to know, do you think that Lauri Markkanen and Chauncey Billups at the same time of their development are the same player?
I think it's different because they play different positions.
But like, but third year into the league, Chauncey Billups, third year into the league, Lauri.
But no, I am concerned at this point that whatever they thought he was going to be, he's not going to be. Unless he moves on from this franchise and gets with someone that can maximize the player that people thought he would be.
Yeah, right now he's Lowry Hawes or Spencer Markkanen.
I mean, and that's a guy, that's a guy that can play for 12 years in the league, but will never. And I mean, there were questions about him at the draft too. There were a lot of people like, well, he was one of those guys that became a hot name as we got to the end of the tournament. And you're like, oh, well, look at him. He's going to fill out. He's going to get bigger up top. He's going to be a force. He can shoot the three. If he can just work on his post game to add to that. And then the league changed. Well, we don't need you to work on a post game. You're going to go play out there. I wish he was more aggressive. And when he is aggressive, like if you look at the way that the season started and he was bad. And then when those games where he was like, screw it, I'm going. Those are the games that he plays his best. And I don't know if they're not enough basketballs for him and Zach LaVine. I just know that we were promised jetpacks, and there are no jetpacks here. That's all I'm saying. All right, we need to take a break. When we come back, we will get into the Super Bowl. I had a conversation with Anthony Herron. There are two elements of these two teams that I want to go through. We will tell you what we think we know about the NFL at 12:40, and then you and I are going to have a conversation about Cubs convention at 1 o'clock. My name is Lawrence Holmes. Hang around. Back after this on The Score. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we will tell you the things that we think we know about the NFL. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. At 1, we are planning on talking with you about Cubs Convention and the Marquee Network and what the team has done, how you feel about things. But for now, I wanted to give you a little bit of talk a little bit about the Super Bowl and some of the things that I think are interesting about this game. There are two factors that I think are interesting. I'm going through Patrick Mahomes' game log. And if you look at Patrick Mahomes before the knee injury this season, he rushed for about 80 yards. And then after that, after the knee and after he came back and after he was healthy, he rushed for about 140 yards. In the two games in the playoffs, Mahomes has 106 rushing yards and a touchdown. I think it's really scary that with his incredible arm talent and his pocket presence, if you then allow him to run the ball vertically. So here's where I've always liked Mahomes. Like, Mahomes in the pocket has good pocket awareness. He's been a guy that'll move. He's a guy that scrambles and then scrambles, keeps his eyes downfield and throws it. If you're now telling me that he will now add this to part of his game, I think it makes him the most dangerous quarterback in the NFL. I asked Anthony Heron about this and what it does to defenses if Mahomes is also going to occasionally be willing to run and run for big chunks. Here's what he told me.
He's basically evolving like Benjamin Button. It's like he's evolving backwards in a way where the skills that you think veteran quarterbacks have with their ability to anticipate and be strong in the pocket, to stand in there in the face of pressure and the physical duress. I mean, the word courage is not like they're necessarily their life is in jeopardy, but physical harm gets inflicted when a guy of my size and the speed of a Leonard Floyd hits you. It hurts. So there's a level of courage that it takes to stand in the pocket and be willing to still look for your receivers, stare those guys down. He doesn't have an issue with that, but he also, like you mentioned, came out of college with the ability to extend the play. And while extending the play, not only is able to be accurate to a single side of the field while on the run, but can contort his body, has the laxity in his shoulders and in his hips to be able to get it around and then also throw from so many different arm slots. And doing all those things are rare feats that most humans can't do. But then to go beyond that and now say that, you know what, while I'm out here, especially it's the playoffs, I don't know, why put it in harm's way? I'm fast enough and I see an angle here that I can exploit up the sideline. How he stayed in bounds on that touchdown run is beyond me. I mean, it's like in the moment, I tweeted it out in the moment. It's like he was Lion-O, and he had taken out the Sword of Omens and said, I can see the future. There's defenders here that look like they have an angle, and somehow I'm going to, even though I'm just kind of fast, I'm not super fast, but I'm going to outrun that angle and get to the end zone. The next series, I still may just extend it and flick it down the field or just extend the play a little bit to my right and throw it all the way down and finally take the shot play. And whatever it is in the moment and what it calls for, it seems like he just is able to see beyond what the defense shows him and just sort of put the ball on a string like a yo-yo where it needs to be, whether it's as a runner, as a passer. We're seeing rare things from this guy right now, man. It's fun to watch.
Thundercats, ho! Anthony Heron gave us Thundercats. Like, right in there. Just a Thundercats reference. That's why I enjoy him. The bottom of the hour is being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. If you want your youth hockey team to play in front of thousands, make it happen with the Chicago Wolves Youth Hockey Program presented by Kia. Go to chicagowolves.com/youth hockey to learn more. Yeah, I feel like that is a scary, scary thing for any NFL defense if now he's going to move up the field. Now, what's really interesting to me about it is that after you have the knee injury, you would think that he would be more interested in staying in the pocket. And it's been the opposite. He's out there making plays with his feet, and we all know about the arm because it's crazy. So let's flip it over to the other side. I believe that the NFL over the last few years, to deal with some of the passing games that have been out there, have tried to find these hybrid defenders. Guys are tweeners. Like, they're big enough to kind of play in the box as a linebacker, but they've got range skills like a safety or a corner. And what I like about the 49ers is is that they've said, okay, you got a bunch of those guys out on the field. We've got beef on our offensive line. And we're going to go triple tight end sets. And we're going to push your hybrid guys around. It's the punch counter punch that goes on in the NFL all the time. I think this is one of the good things about what Kyle Shanahan has done. It's the adaptation. It's on the same level of the adaptation that we saw from the Ravens with their quarterback and saying, here's a way that we can change the game and exploit the game. The 49ers are doing that by taking your hybrids and pushing them around. Here's what Heron said about that.
It's speed via physicality. Their offensive line still imposes their will physically on the opponent. They still look to move you backwards up front. You know, different run schemes operate different ways. The Denver Broncos, for feels like generations of football fandom now, have been operating with the zone scheme that's more lateral based and have had success with it for decades now in doing a very similar run scheme regardless of the head coach. But they were one of the pioneers of zone blocking and zone run game in the NFL. San Francisco has a lot of zone elements to the way they operate, but they still do it with some brutality. And so it's not only about the lateral movements. The lateral nature of it, attacking the latitude of the defense, comes more from the backfield action than it does the line itself. The line is moving. The offensive line is moving that defensive front against their will, and the linebackers associated with it are on skates at times. Why you have a running back who may, in some plays, attack you downhill and hit a vertical crease, while at the same time they'll either show some action, some ghost motion, some jet motion going on the back end of it, or will legitimately hand it to someone else who's going in that direction. And when you think of what Raheem Mostert was doing, the speed he was getting on the second level of the defense, frequently enough untouched, but every once in a while after he pressed the hole, he'd bounce it outside. And just the speed that they run the ball with, you add that to an offensive line that is willing to attack up front and is coached to attack up front and play with physicality, then it's like watching modern day Alabama at the collegiate level or Urban Meyer's Florida teams or, you know, modern day Ohio State, if we want to go that route, where you get the zone element of it, but it's the zone is more based off of the movement, the lateral nature of the backs, the folks carrying the ball and from a ball handling perspective than it is the offensive line being lateral or being finesse. And that's what felt like here in Chicago just has been over the last couple of years a little bit off kilter, because it was a vertical charge that the offensive line was having success with under the previous regime and the previous running back, Jordan Howard. And now it's a different track that they're blocking on that they haven't quite figured out yet. San Francisco's got it down, man.
They do have it down, and they are what you want. Like, it's sexy to see it that way. It's also, it's fun to see the adaptation take place. I was in the barbershop this morning, and we were talking a little bit about this, and my guy Nolan goes, yeah, man. And the Bears always seem to be like two seasons behind. Like, they're behind the trend. And now, we'll see. We'll see if they're behind it or if they're able to ride it out. It doesn't seem like, with some of the additions that they've made to the coaching staff, that they're in that direction. But the bigger issue is, are you drafting offensive line well? And if you can go back, and Olin went through like 30 years of drafting for the Bears on the offensive line, as an organization for being the black and blue division and we get off the bus running the ball back in the old days, they really haven't address their needs on the offensive line through the draft. And they've had offensive lines that have been questionable. Tell you some things that I think we know about the NFL coming up next here on The Score.
It's time for What Do You Think You Know?
We do this every week during the football season, and we don't know, we might extend it outside of the football season. We just discuss what we think we know about the NFL. I'm Lawrence. You'll hear from Herbie. You'll hear from Rick Camp as well. Let me start with this. I think I know that this matchup in the playoffs is going to be a lot of fun. And we always just look forward to the Super Bowl regardless. And I'm excited about the Super Bowl regardless. But I think this matchup is really interesting because I think you have the future of quarterbacking, the present slash future of quarterbacking, on one side. And on the other side, I think that you have a team that is doing is retro, and their retro worked. In a league where people tell you this is a passing league, you can't run the ball and play defense and throw the ball to a tight end. That's old school. That's never going to work. That's ridiculous. And yet here we are with them being the best team in the NFC and them pretty much being the best team in the NFC for most of the season. And they're going to be in the Super Bowl. I'm so looking forward to how does Shanahan attack what Kansas City does defensively without turning the ball over. Because if you turn it over and you give it to Patrick Mahomes, even with that great defense, that really fast off a defensive line that can get after him, you are begging for problems. But I'm super excited about seeing, like, actually sitting down and consuming the Super Bowl, not because it's the Super Bowl, but because it's a fun actual football matchup. Herbie, what's something that you think you know?
I think I know that a lot of people are overreacting to Aaron Rodgers and the Packers losing to the San Francisco 49ers. Rodgers is the only quarterback in the history of the game to lose a playoff game despite having 300 yards passing or more and 75% completion percentage or more. He went 31 of 39 and finished with 326, two touchdowns, two interceptions. Garbage time, whatever you have. He's the only quarterback ever to do that. So they still lost by 17 points. So twofold thing. Rodgers is the only quarterback in the history of the sport to have 100 passer rating either in the playoffs and in regular season. Also, people always like to say the San Francisco 49ers thing is a defensive thing. I just rattled off these numbers. They put a bunch of offensive numbers against that San Francisco team. They still beat them by 17 points. So if you're counting on San Francisco just locking you down in defense, no, sir. They got you on offense, too.
With Rodgers, it's I feel like we saw he needs a little bit more help. Like, he's a lesser version of himself, but it's still really good. And if they got him another receiver, that and the guys they have are okay, but you have a number one, he needs a Robin badly. And if you did that along with Aaron Jones, you can roll with this for a couple years and be right there at the top of the NFC.
As a caller pointed out to me yesterday, a lot of Bears fans happy that the Packers lost yesterday or Sunday, and rightfully so. But remember, that Packer team beat you twice. While they lost twice to San Francisco, think about how far you're off that path. San Francisco's that much better than Green Bay, and you're not that much better than, I mean, you're worse than Green Bay. So
the Packers team
time to go.
Averaged in the two wins against the Bears 15 and a half points. And you weren't really close in either one of the games that you played against them.
Have you tuned into any Milwaukee or Green Bay radio?
No. What are our friends at the Fan saying? People mad?
There are callers that want Aaron Rodgers traded.
I mean, if they want to trade him to the Bears, that'd be great.
Sure.
Since we're all doing this pie in the sky stuff where Tom Brady's going to come play here and Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers, let's just get Aaron Rodgers down here too.
His QB rating in these playoffs is 104. I mean, we're just ridiculous when we're thinking about Aaron Rodgers and where he is in this game as far as one of the best quarterbacks. We sleep on him just because we hate him because he's up in Green Bay, but
I don't.
They're still great.
Yeah.
He's still great.
I would love for Green Bay to have to actually know what searching for a quarterback is like.
Because they haven't had to do it in 30 years.
Yep.
It would be great if they had to do that. Campy, what's something that you think you know about the NFL?
What week is it on the NFL schedule?
It's
19?
Pro Bowl week.
Yes. I was going to talk about this too. Go ahead.
All right. My thing. It's an annual thing. I think we really need to stop when talking about Hall of Fame cases for people. Stop bringing up number of Pro Bowls. Because now, more than ever, you either have the participants in the Super Bowl not partaking, or you have just so many people with nagging injuries that are just out of the game that don't want to participate, you're having so many people be named Pro Bowlers that it's devalued what it means. Like, I'm all for just do some skills competition stuff, have a roster named just like All Pro, but All Pro has to be the standard for the Hall of Fame, not X number of Pro Bowls.
Well, okay, I'll make a small change. Pro Bowl selections.
Okay, that's fair.
All right? If you are selected to the Pro Bowl and, like, the additions don't count. Like, Lance doesn't even talk about the times where he was, like, a replacement. You have to be selected to the Pro Bowl. And if you, like, to me, that feels more like All Pro to me. Is you have a chance to look at your career and be like, hey, this person made it on. But I agree with you. And it's so funny. Like, back in our conversation that we had during Is Mitch Good Week, one of the things that Urlacher said was, of course he is. He's a Pro Bowler. And that's someone that should know better. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, he participated in the Pro Bowl, but come on.
And today, I thought this was where Rick was going. Xavier Rhodes. Now, you've heard the name because he's been good in the NFL. This year was not the year that he was good. So they did the thing where the fans kind of vote in a person during MLB All-Star Week. But for this Pro Bowl, I guess, I don't know, it's the players or the coaches who named the replacement. He is 125 out of 134 cornerbacks this year ranked by Pro Football Focus. He's not, you know, just having a bad year. He is bad. And they named him to the Pro Bowl. To speak to Rick's point, they should not do this anymore. I mean, Jordan Howard was a Pro Bowler, was named a Pro Bowler. Mitch Trubisky was a Pro Bowler. So, you know, we need to get away with this stuff. Unless you're actually playing bowling, like Murph said, Pro Bowl means nothing.
By the way, go to Joe Ostrowski's Twitter feed for the video he had of the skills competition last year where Mitch couldn't complete a pass where his receiver was on the other side of a big, like, plexiglass thing.
Oh, yeah, like, I remember
it was,
that.
It was like a basically like a drop, try and drop it in the bucket type of.
Yeah.
Type throw. It didn't go great to Mike Evans, who's
6'5". Yeah. Yeah.
And today, we had from. They have drug testing.
What are you doing, Pro Bowl?
Drug testing. If I was a guy who went to Orlando, firstly, and they say, hey, yeah, here's a cup, fill it up, I would like, okay, I'm heading on the next plane back home. Bye. Drug testing. I've been chilling at the house, smoking some, because my team's out the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm dealing with all this pain that I've had to deal with.
Yeah, I'm going to fail this drug test for this exhibition game. I'm going home.
I think that I know that the Pro Bowl is always going to be around, even though it shouldn't be. That game does a number. It does a really great ratings number. People tune into it. They bet the over, like all of that good stuff with the Pro Bowl. But I do feel like it's kind of a waste of time. I also think that Orlando is just not, I get it. It's a city that you don't have a team in that gets an opportunity to see some NFL players. It's just like, really? Like, the whole NFL is in Orlando, and then you're going to come to Miami. It just seems like a waste of everyone's time. People would rather go to Miami. And I'll tell you this. I mean, not Miami, too. Hawaii. And you know why? Because all their family not going. In Orlando, everybody in your family gets to be like, yo, can I get some tickets to the Pro Bowl? And you have to worry about them. Pretty much with Hawaii, you're taking your immediate family, and that's it. You're getting an actual vacation on the NFL, and you can go play the two-hand touch stuff that they do at the Pro Bowl instead of spending your weekend in Orlando or your week in Orlando getting ready for that.
I have one more, Lawrence. I think I know. I actually do know. This is the first time that two teams with the primary color of red will face in the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Ever.
Okay, cool.
I mean, you would think it would happen more in 53 chances.
So we're going to get a color rush Super Bowl? Chiefs in all red and San Francisco in all white? Because those San Francisco all whites are pretty dope.
They want to, and the league said no.
Really?
Yeah.
That's whack.
I thought I saw Pro Football Talk post that.
That's whack.
I've got a Super Bowl-related one that's quick.
All right, go ahead.
Who's the Super Bowl ref this year?
Bill Vinovich, right?
Who was also the ref of what game? The NFC title game last year with the Saints and the Rams. They let him have the Super Bowl the year after that?
He had a good year, Rick.
God bless that the Saints aren't in it. Because if they were, that would be problematic for the folks in NOLA.
No, the refs took care of that earlier in the postseason.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did. So that's what we think we know about the NFL. If you want to text in your thoughts, 670-11 is a way to do it. Coming up, we are going to talk about the Cubs. I'd like to talk about Cub Convention. If you were there when Tom Ricketts debuted Marquee, if you were in the room for the reaction, or if you just like to talk about Marquee and Cubs viewing overall, I look forward to your phone call. 312-644-6767 is the number. Again, that's 312-644-6767. Cubs talk on the other side. My name is Lawrence Holmes. You're listening to The Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh, oh.